Tato jaya mudirayat nasta prayesha badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyutama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. So today we are reading Canto 5, Chapter 14 of Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 4. The Sanskrit is a prose, so there is no strict meter. But I was thinking that maybe we could try to kind of repeat piece by piece all together, and then if anyone is feeling enthusiastic, they can do the whole verse at the end. Yatahi anuvatsaram. Yatahi anuvatsaram. Krishyamanam apyadagta bijam. Krishyamanam apyadagta bijam. Kshetar punar. Kshetram punar. Kshetram punar evapana kale gulma trina virudbir eva vapana kale gulma trina virudbir gahvaram iva bhavati eva meva Kahvaramiva bhavati evam eva Grihashrama karma kshetram Grihashrama karma kshetram Yasminahi karma nyutsidanti Yasminahi karma nyutsidanti Yadayam karma yadayam kama karanda yadayam kama karanda esha vasata if anyone wants to do the verse otherwise we continue okay So let's repeat word by word. Yata, just as he certainly anuvatsaram every year krishyamanam being plowed api although adagta bijam in which the seeds are not burned. Shishirada Gopinath Ki Jaya. Kshetram, the field. Puna, again. Eva, certainly. Avapana Kale, at the times for sowing the seeds. Gulma, by bushes. Trina, by grasses. Virudbi, by the creepers. Gavaramiva, like a bower. Pavati, becomes. Everyone knows what's a bower. Because it's like a bush, right? Oh, okay. Because there is no point in just reading without knowing the words. Evam, does. Eva, certainly. Grihashrama, family life. Karmakshetram, the field of activities. Yasmin, in which? Na, not. He, certainly. Karmani utsidanti, fruitive activities disappear. Yat, therefore, I am this Kamakarandha, the storehouse of fruitive desire. Esha, this Avasata, abode. Yes. Okay, wonderful. According to Bhagavatam, it's pleasant only as long as the insects don't come and start biting. At least according to the next verse. Okay, yes, thank you very much. Translation of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Every year, the plowman plows over his grain field, completely uprooting all weeds. Nonetheless, the seeds lie there, and not being completely burned, again come up with the plants sown in the field. Even after being plowed under, the weeds come up densely. Similarly, in the Grihastha Ashram, family life, is a field of fruitive activity. Unless the desire to enjoy family life is completely burned out, it grows up again and again. Even though camphor may be removed from a pot, the pot nonetheless retains the aroma of camphor. As long as the seeds of desire are not destroyed, fruitive activities are not destroyed. Please repeat. Every year the plowman plows over his grain field, completely uprooting all weeds. Nonetheless, the seeds lie there. And not being completely burned, again come up with the plants sown in the field. Even after being plowed under, the weeds come up densely. Similarly, the Grihastha Ashram is a field of fruitive activity. Unless the desire to enjoy family life is completely burned out, it grows up again and again. Even though camphor may be removed from a pot, the pot nonetheless retains the aroma of camphor. As long as the seeds of desire are not destroyed, fruitive activities are not destroyed. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Unless one's desires are completely transferred to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the desire for family life continues, even after one has taken sannyas. Sometimes in our society, ISKCON, a person out of sentiment may take sannyas, but because his desires are not burned completely, he again takes to family life, even at the risk of losing his prestige and disgracing his good name. These strong desires can be burned out completely when one fully engages in the service of the Lord in devotional service. So this is the whole purport today. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasme Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganaragunatam Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu sute devi pranamami hari priye vancha kalpat rubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So dear devotees, thank you for coming and giving attention to Srimad Bhagavatam. I want to thank Mahaprabhu for giving me the opportunity to be a little bit absorbed in Krishna, in thoughts of Krishna, by preparing a little bit as much as I had time for this class. Please forgive any mistakes, and if you would be kind enough, bless me so I can speak something for the pleasure of your good selves and the deities present. So today's verse is a continuation of this chapter. Actually, we have one guest. He's your first time in a Bhagavatam class, right? Your first time in this kind of setting in a class, right? Yes. So yesterday he was asking something about the mantras, and previously there were some mantras recited. They're very auspicious, and also what will be said in the future is also considered transcendental. So even if you don't understand something, then you can ask later all the present devotees, because I'll be gone, about things, because maybe there will be some things that cannot be immediately grasped. Okay, so we are in the chapter 14, and in the canto 5, this is a famous canto by being sometimes referred as a kind of a heavy canto. So before going into into the specific topic that here is referred to, and that is the topic is the seed of desire, and as this desire manifests as family life, I was first thinking that maybe we could speak a little bit about why is Bhagavatam so heavy, why is Bhagavatam not being very, sometimes it seems that it's not so pleasant to hear all these truths. And there are some verses in this fifth canto which are, you know, they need some time to digest. They're not necessarily always so easily digestible. So the question is, why is Bhagavatam having such a tone? And thinking about this question, we have to understand some things about Bhagavatam. One thing is that Bhagavatam is a Bhagavatam is a conversation between a completely purified sage who didn't have any trace of desire for sense gratification or any kind of reciprocation when he was speaking. Because when the sages speak, their greatest concern is the ultimate benefit of the hearer. They're not necessarily concerned whether they will get good reputation. They're not, because they're self-satisfied. Therefore, they're not really looking for any kind of benefit from the speaker. And many times we see in the modern times we have different speakers, and they're sometimes trying to please the audience or to cater for the audience. But we see that Bhagavatam is not that kind of literature, and Shukadev Goswami is not that kind of man. He's actually a pure sage who is working to purify the heart of the hearer. And not only that, that's the first thing, is that that it is spoken by completely purified, saintly, purified person, and it is spoken for the ultimate benefit of the hearer. But the other thing which adds up is that the hearer is just in front of that. So when you are just in front of time of that, you don't necessarily want like a pleasant talk or a nap on your shoulder, because he really wanted to be delivered. He understood, okay, I'm going to live in 7 days. Therefore, let me use these days in the most beneficial ways. Let me understand everything completely so I can finish my life in a successful way. So taking these things in consideration, we see that Bhagavatam is not, sometimes it's a little bit something that would modernly be called like a cutting edge book. It is something that, it is, Bhagavatam is revealing things as they are. And it's described that Bhagavatam came to overshadow all the lesser or Kaitava Dharma, all the lesser or how to say, cheating religious principles, and to establish the real religion. And in order to do so, Bhagavatam needs to speak it, the truths about spiritual and material life Bhagavatam is showing things in the light that they really are. It is not trying to please the hearer, it is actually trying to uplift the hearer and to purify it. And this is, there are many verses glorifying Bhagavatam, that Bhagavatam, just by giving oral reception to Srimad Bhagavatam, one's heart is being purified. So if one is sincere and if one is hearing Bhagavatam, then it's described, and in very short time one will one will be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. So in order to establish such a great goal, Bhagavatam is not catering to its audience. And and the other thing that, for example, Sanatana Goswami, when he glorifies Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that Bhagavatam is giving saintliness to the persons who are unsaintly. So just by hearing Bhagavatam, we are actually getting the eyes to see the reality as it is. Because as it is described in the scriptures, at the moment our senses are polluted and our vision is polluted, and we understand that actually everything depends upon the vision. So what Krishna is working on, both in Bhagavad Gita and in Bhagavatam, and in true every scripture that speaks about the essence, is actually working on the change of consciousness rather than the change of externals. And many times in the Kali Yuga, everything is upside down. Everybody is concerned with the externals. But what God is concerned is the internals, because it's understood that if you change your consciousness, then everything, all the externals will be, what Srila Prabhupada says, dovetailed. They will be used in such a manner that they are becoming favorable. Because it's explained that most of the things in this world are neutral. They're neither necessarily very ugra or very very heavily unfavorable to devotional service. And unless it's directly Krishna Katha, they're not necessarily very beneficial. They're neutral, so it depends upon how we use them. And many situations in which we find ourselves are very much up to our consciousness, and how we deal with them and what we can get out from them is dependent on our consciousness. So as Bhagavad Gita also explains, that everything depends on our vision. And here, in this verse, it's spoken about material desire. And Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he explains that the lust is the biggest enemy in material world. And this lust is clearly, this lust manifests in many ways. And one of them is family life. So this desire that sprouts out of lust, For example, Krishna explains that lust is situated in three places. Lust takes shelter of three places. It takes shelter of the mind, of the intelligence, and of the senses. These are residing places of lust. So it is understood that by applying the process of devotional service, all these three are purified. And only when one has purified senses, mind, and intelligence, one can actually see things as they are. So sometimes it seems, oh, Bhagavatam is so heavy, but Bhagavatam is just outlining the things as they really are. And as one is slowly getting, as one is by the mercy of the process, when the senses become purified, then one can see, oh, what Bhagavatam is saying is true. And also by the experience in life, one can say after many, because like Srila Prabhupada explains he speaks in Nectar of Devotion how actually material life is just like one embarrassment after another. Because in the beginning there are high hopes, but then as life goes on, you know, practically after 25 your body starts dwindling and you understand, oh, it's one embarrassment after the other. There are many hopes, but there, all these material hopes are baffled one after another. It's one thing after another, and there's always some hope that there will be some kind of happiness in the future derived from material arrangements. But Bhagavatam in the first verse describes that this kind of mentality is like a mentality of one who is in a desert and who is running after mirage. The more you run after the mirage gets farther and farther, and you get more and more thirsty. Not only that the mirage gets, so you get so thirsty that at the end you become practically crazy. And I don't know if you know, but generally people, when they're really in the desert and they really run after mirage, after some time the mind is so powerful that it bewilders them so much that they think that they actually came there. And they take with their hands, they take this hot sand and they start drinking the hot sand. So the hot sand cannot satisfy the thirst. It actually just increases the thirst. And this is a little bit like, at least according to Bhagavatam, like our situation here, because what the living entities, by their nature, they're actually seeking for spiritual enjoyment, because enjoyment from matter is not possible. If you are spiritual, you don't... It's like a fish cannot really derive enjoyment in the air, from on the earth. So the fish has to derive the enjoyment according to the nature of the fish, and that is in the water. So we're trying to derive enjoyment from something that is actually not enjoyable. And by doing things like that, we're actually getting more and more thirsty. But Bhagavatam explains that if we engage in devotional service, that our vision becomes clear and we can see things as they are. And also, Lord Chaitanya said, Chetudarpanamachana, when the heart is cleansed, then we can see things as they really are. So here, in this... I'm sorry if I'm speaking too fast. In this verse specifically, it's spoken about desire for family life. And there are two... so to say, issues arising up from this verse. One issue is so to say, a central issue, and that is the desire to enjoy. Desire for sense gratification is the all-pervading principle of material world. This is why we're here, this is why we came here, this is why we stay here. And if we want to attain something higher, we have to change this. So one thing is desire for personal selfish desire for sense gratification. And the other thing is the illusion that material life is pleasant, that it brings success, that material happiness in its absolute state exists, and that it will happen only if we try harder and things like that. So these two things come up, at least to my mind, when I think about this verse. And Bhagavatam is showing actually that how this, I mean, we already spoke about the mirage and how actually material happiness is just like that. It always seems that it's just a step away, but it never happens. And I was thinking maybe I can say something a little bit about the desire. And of course, even according to Buddhist, desire is the root cause of all misery. Many philosophies understand this point, because this is, if you look around in life, you can see that everybody is how to say, urged by desire to act, by different desires. And in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami elaborates on this fact of desire, and this is actually what the verse is about, because the verse says that even though the plowman is, this analogy could be understood as over many lifetimes, the person is trying somehow or other to eradicate these sinful desires, and you know, in one lifetime person takes to renunciation, in another lifetime he does something else, and all, you know, sometimes there is family life, but then the person understands, oh, this doesn't exactly work the way I want it, so then there is a renouncing, but then, you know, again and again things come up, and often people ask a question, but why is it that devotees, you know, they understand the philosophy, but then still they take up to these things? But the thing is that the desire is so much deeply rooted that it's not so easy to, it's like just removing the surface or healing the symptoms does not remove the disease. So so it's explained that in our heart we store different kinds of desires, and as long as we don't more or less come in touch with people who are inclined spiritually and who know something about the Lord and devotional service, these will all be, you know, subtle shades of gray of material desires. Some of these desires will be colored by the mode of passion, some will be colored by mode of goodness, some will become colored by mode of ignorance. So it will seem that some are worse than the others, but they're all material desires. So... the question is, how do we eradicate these desires completely? And and also, I mean, just to bring the topic closer, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes how how the fortunate soul, after wandering through universes for many lifetimes, if one is fortunate, he gets in contact with Guru and Krishna, and they give him the seed of bhakti, from which the bhakti creeper grows. And it's explained that along with this bhakti creeper, there are many other seeds that grow up. So there are these two, let's say, analogies that come up again and again about the seeds of material desire that are stored in the heart. And according to let's say Vedic psychology, it's explained that whenever a person does something, there is a certain light kind of samskar done left traced in the consciousness, traced in the heart. And the more we see this act, whichever it is, whether it is considered pious or sinful, whatever we do, this leaves a trace. And the more significant we feel about this act, or even by seeing others act, the more impression is deeper. So by going through different lifetimes, there is a tendency. This is explained. This is how material nature works. And this is, you know, the thing is that the Vedic scriptures, they actually explain whole mechanics of everything. So they also explain the mechanics of inner psychology. So the thing is that once we do something, there is a tendency for it to be repeated. And the more we repeat it, the more the samskaras in our mind become deeper. And Rupa Goswami, quoting from Padma Purana and other sources, explains this in using this same analogy of the seeds. And he says that he's speaking about sinful reactions, because it's described that the first characteristics of pure devotional service is that it eradicates material desires. Klesha gni, it eradicates klesha. Klesha means different sufferings or causes of sufferings that arise in contact with material nature. And he describes that, Rupa Goswami says how there are things that are already manifested, like, for example, one can have a family life or be in a certain situation now. And this is some karma, this is already manifested from the previous lives. But there are things that they're still seeded in the heart. And he explains that these seeds in the heart cannot be actually, not only him, but also what's the name? The Yamadutas explained this, that by, for example, by charity or by penance or by austerities or different kind of things can only temporarily heal the symptoms of desire. They can only work with the things that are actually manifested or almost manifested, but these seeds of desire that are in the heart, Shishirada Gopinath Kijaya, the seeds of desire that are in the heart are not eradicated, so therefore again and again they happen. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example of an elephant's bed. He says that a person sometimes, you know, after seeing that material life doesn't work, a person takes and performs different kind of purificatory processes, but then because the desire is not eradicated, then it comes up and one... It's described that one, like throwing, you know, elephants, that when they come out of water, they roll in the ground. They just wash themselves, but then they roll in the ground. They're completely dirty. So it's described that unless the desire is I would say, eradicated, this is exactly what is happening. And Padma Purana says that devotional service has this ability to... the devotional service... performed in Krishna consciousness is like a blazing fire in the forest that kills all different snakes of desire, because these desires are compared to snakes that bite one. And it says that if one sets fire to the forest, then they all burn out. And also Bhagavatam here gives an example that if the seeds are in the ground, you can plow very deeply. You can, in other words, you can have very sincere and prolonged attempts in austerity and in different ways to eradicate this desire, but they are not uprooted. And what it's not Yamadutas, it's Vishnudutas. What Vishnudutas describe in Bhagavatam in the sixth canto is that only devotional service is able to eradicate this desire. And also in Padma Purana, where was that? I forgot what was the source. Was that It's described that the blazing fire will... Krishna speaks to Uddhava in 11th canto. Krishna says, Uddhava, my devotional service performed to me is like setting a fire that burns out completely all traces of seeds of material desire. And he says, this is the only way. So we see there is this verse, it's a famous verse, which says that whether one has all material desires, or one has no material desires, or one has desires for liberation, one should take to Tivrena Bhakti Yogina. Tivrena means something that is full, like fiery, like completely surrendered, strong, fired up devotional service, you could even say, you know, in some extent. And this is the way to actually eradicate these things. And Srila Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur explains very in great detail in Madhurya Kadambini the process how going through different stages of how going through the process of devotional service, how the mind is purified gradually. And he explains how in the beginning the material consciousness pervades and the spirituality is focused in one point. You know, a spiritual consciousness is just in one place, but then as one is advancing, then the spiritual consciousness is becoming more pervasive and material consciousness is becoming more localized. So we see that actually the solution is devotional service, but the question is how we can get to this like really fiery bhakti, how we can get to this one-pointed focus or surrender into devotional service. And what the sages explain is that it is possible only by the mercy of devotees, or like Jamashim Prabhu yesterday quoted, that only if one takes bath in the dust of the feet of a great Vaishnava who has, as Bhagavatam says, who has no other desires except for pure devotional service, then only one can be delivered. And this is a figurative speech, but the fact is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains in Harinama Chintamani how desire from a heart of a purified soul through his words is coming into a heart of another person. Because the question is, how do we get from sinful desires to saintly desires? Because what Srila Prabhupada says, first sentence of the purpose is, unless one's desires are completely transferred to the service of Supreme Personality of God. So somehow or other, it's a question of shifting or transformation. We have to in one sense ignore these desires and create new desires, but the question is how to create. And it was interesting because Achyananda Swami this year he came and he gave a whole lecture. He said, you know, it took me such a long time to understand this point, and it was all the time in front of my face, and that was the point that good desires are created by association. Of course, I mean, Maharaj knows this point, but in order to point it out for us, the good desires are... So somehow or other, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, beg, borrow, or steal the nectar of the holy name. That means come in front of someone who has it, and that's a Vaishnava. And before I end, there's another thing that made... yesterday Jamachan Prabhu, I really liked his class specifically because he said one thing, and that is that he quoted one of the verses that I think that are great hope givers and saviors, and that is that if one somehow or other remembers Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then even difficult things, because sometimes it's not completely untrue that it's not so easy to eradicate all material desires and to be completely surrendered. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, even most difficult things become easily possible. And if one doesn't remember him, then and doesn't get his mercy, then even the most simple things become difficult. And in the introduction of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada, he explains that without understanding Lord Chaitanya, who came to explain propagate the cult of Radha and Krishna, one cannot understand Radha and Krishna. And we also see that practically, without really absorbing ourselves and knowing the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, we cannot understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Because, for example, for us just to read this verse is one thing, but then to have an example, it's something else. And we see how the associates of Lord Chaitanya dealt with family life. We have a great example in Associates of Lord Chaitanya. It's explained in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that all the associates of Lord Chaitanya, whether they were grihasthas or renunciates, were completely renounced. There is a verse that says that. Whether they were households or renounced externally, internally they were completely renounced. And we see, for example, exemplary lives of Shiva Thakur, of Advaita Acharya. You know, every day a festival, every day honoring devotees, inviting them to their home, feeding them, having festivals, singing the holy names with them, discussing Krishna Katha. So this is a great example, because sometimes it seems, okay, this is a nice theory, but how do we apply this? But, I mean, I have had the fortune, even in our society, to see many good examples of actually grihasthas who have transformed. Because what Srila Prabhupada here says is that the problem is not the problem is not the grihastha ashram, the problem is not the externalness. He says that but because where is it? Just a second. That one takes to family life because desire for sense gratification in household life is not burned out. So the problem is not the household life. The problem is desire to see household life as a source of sense gratification. So only if one shifts and tries to see. Tries to see the household life as a means to glorify the Lord and to serve Him, one can be very easily completely delivered from this thing. And we see the great example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Sometimes it's explained that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was the perfect renunciate, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the perfect householder. They gave the examples, father and a son. They gave two different examples so everyone can follow. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote this amazing poetry in Sharanagati describing how actually what is his conscience and how he shifts from first understanding how material life is a miserable place to actually surrendering and what happens then. And he says that he explains that now that I have surrendered to you, unto you, my Lord, I see that all my family members are, that your house, my house is your household. I am just a servant in your household, and all my family members, my wife, my relatives, all my possessions are actually your possessions, and we are here basically together to serve you. So this is what he is explaining, and if there is that shift of consciousness, which we see that the associates of Lord Chaitanya displayed all the time, then the so-called material life, which is not anymore material life, becomes completely blissful. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, as soon as I hear kirtan or harikatha in my home, I see Goloka Vrindavan manifesting in my own house. That's what he says. So Srila Prabhupada explained that the words of Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur following in his footsteps were as powerful and as true as the Vedic sutras. So he says that we should take them very seriously. And both Narottam and Bhaktivinoda, they say, Grihetako Vanatako, whether you're in the Grihastha Ashram or in Vanaprastha Ashram, just take the holy name of Hari, or just take the holy name of Gauranga, like Narottam Das Thakur says. He says, whether one is a renunciate or a householder, if he chants, O Gauranga, I beg for his association. So the point is not so much, we should not be as concerned with how to purify ourselves or an art and virtue, but we should be much more concerned with how to achieve, you know, perfection in spiritual life, how to develop this strong desire or art of purity, because it's understood that if one gains the proper desires, if one gains the higher taste, if one becomes fixed in devotional service, then everything becomes spontaneously eradicated. So I will stop here if there is any questions. Thank you very much. Sorry. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, question. Okay, yes.
Spiritual life.
Yes, I mean, it is explained that the purpose of human life is to perform tapasya, and we can see that from beginning, Lord Brahma, the first instruction that he got was to perform tapasya. So it's understood that human life should be differentiated from lower species by doing tapasya. And for some people, it's tapasya in renunciation, externally renouncing things, is more appropriate in their stage of development, in their personal, because every one of us is on a personal path. We're not all in the same place, and we don't all have the same things to purify in the same way. So because Krishna, he is very personal, he's giving us different circumstances where we can get purified. So for some people, it's easier to get purified in renounced ashrams, and for some people in the grihastha ashram. But the point here is that one should always remember Krishna, because if one is in grihastha ashram, there is also a tapasya. But if one is trying to be neither, then basically, of course, we cannot say, you're sinful because you don't choose any of the ashrams, because we understand that Kali Yuga is a difficult place and we shouldn't point fingers at anyone. But practically, it's important to be dutiful and to take up certain tapasya. So if we understand that, then it's understood that if you're in a grihastha ashram, you shouldn't understand it as a place of enjoyment, but actually as a place of, you know, you sacrifice your property, you sacrifice your time and your money to please the Lord. In this way, it's purified, because it's understood, like, why is it understood that grihastha ashram is more like this, as you're saying, this misunderstanding that it's a big obstacle in life, is because it is easier to, like, there is, for example, it's easier to fall down when it's slippery than when it's not slippery. You can still fall down even if it's not slippery. You can always fall down. Even if you just walk on a straight ground, you can fall down, you know. You're not careful, you just stumble and you fall down. But if it's slippery, it's easier. So it's described that in grihastha ashram, one has to be more careful, because the allurements of Maya are closer. So that doesn't mean that it's necessarily a wrong thing to do, and specifically, individually, not a wrong thing to do. But it's a matter of how one takes up these things, and how one, because it's described that, I don't want to actually go further on about it, but yeah, that's the point, that there should be tapasya in any stage of life, because that's what gets one purified. Yes. That's a very important point. We shouldn't, this change from in life expecting things from outside rather than giving is a big shift. It's a big shift. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't see how you can avoid problems altogether. And there are even problems in spiritual life, but they're spiritualized, in spiritual world. I mean, what to speak about material world, which is like a constant source of problems. It's geared like that. It's like Maya Devi, she does her service very nicely. She doesn't sleep on, she doesn't forget, like, there are constantly problems. So in whichever... wherever your position, there are problems. But the matter is how you deal with your problems. how you deal with your problems. Do you get your lessons? Do you go forward, or you just become miserable from, you know? But it's a fact that in Grihastha Ashram there is a big exertion on the part of all family members to achieve a certain goal. But if this exertion is how do you call that? Dovetailed towards pleasing the Lord, pleasing Lord Chaitanya. For example, let's take example of Lord Chaitanya's associates. Like, they still did things, but they didn't feed just their own family. They always had Vaishnavas as guests. They didn't just do things, but they actually transformed everything into Krishna consciousness. And in this way, they dovetailed this situation. Yes. Well, the fact is that we are, you know, we're going to be tested in spiritual life. It's not that it's all just easy things. So we have to show to the Lord our determination. Like, I remember once in one lecture, someone asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He said, you know, Maharaj, I was doing some statistics, and today in America, economical situation is such and such. And I think that practically grihasthas, more or less what he was saying, is grihasthas cannot really maintain their sadhana. They cannot really, you know, do what they're supposed to do to have actually active spiritual lives. And he said, do you agree? And Maharaj, you know, he looked at him and said, of course I don't agree. How can I agree with you? He said, I mean, of course I can't say that, but I'm just repeating his words. He said, I don't understand why grihasthas don't go to bed early. Because if you go to bed early, you can wake up early and chant your rounds before your kids wake up. I mean, I've seen good examples. I've seen my god sister, one god sister of mine in USA, they have kids. She wakes up, if she steps out of bed, her boys wake up. So she wakes up, she has her bead bag next to the bed, and she chants in the bed. She doesn't even go to brush her teeth, because if she does that, then chanting is finished because the kids are awake. But she is determined to follow the instruction of her spiritual master, so she wakes up two hours before the kids, or at least 1 hour before the whole mass starts, and she chants. You understand, the point is, it's true, it's harder to maintain a family than to maintain a kingdom. But then on the other hand, you also have, you know, you have renunciates who are temple presidents. They also have a lot of duties that start early on from the morning, so they also have to manage their time. So it's a matter of time management and determination. And I mean, I agree with you, there is a lot of examples which are not necessarily uplifting, but if we don't have good examples, then let's give good examples. But it's not true that we don't have good examples. But it's a question of what you look for to see. We have to stop now. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.